I don't know if you heard, but Doug Feiger of the Knack has died of cancer at age 57. He'd been battling it for 6 or 7 years. That means two of the four founding members of the Knack have died of cancer in their mid to late 50s. Two of the original founding members of the Knack survive. Doug Feiger having huge success, not just with that song, but also the album, Get the Knack, and created that that whole retro power pop, sort of garage band punk sound that a lot of people made money off of for years. Of course, the Knack never had that big a song again, but they were established for a couple of good selling albums, and hopefully Doug Feiger died comfortably in his home, surrounded by the many people that know him. That's all that any of us can hope for, I think, in life, is to feel like we accomplished something. Our name will live on for some reason, even if it's just a small circle of friends who will still speak well of us. That kind of goes back to a couple of conversations we had last hour on Coast to Coast. The question was posed just before the top of the hour break. Of all of the topics that come up on Coast to Coast, which are the ones that I think will be most likely to be proven true? I'll address that and get your open line calls coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Open line calls means you decide where the show's going to go for the rest of this hour. We look forward to grabbing your call. Let me just go back and grab that last topic one more time. Of the many subjects that have come up along the way, what are the ones that I think I believe in the most or I invest in the most? The ones I think most likely to be true or at least be credible. We literally cover like 100 topics ongoing on Coast to Coast. And I'm not kidding. If you look at the history of the show, we delve into many things. Of the paranormal subjects, the ones that, people often use in terms of, do you believe in something? I'll give you my stock answer right away, which is I'll think about anything. I reserve what I quote unquote believe in for my religious beliefs. I think that I don't need faith to believe in something if it's something of science. So I try not to use that term believe in it. I either think it's true or I don't, or I'm sort of agnostic on whether or not I think it's happening. Let's go with the Loch Ness Monster. I never liked that term. I don't think if there is a Nessie, she certainly isn't a monster. That is to say, some sort of soulless, ravenous being. I don't think that there's any case at all of Nessie having eaten anybody. And I know that it's a popular name without necessarily being connected to an understanding of what that implies. However, I as interested as I am in the Loch Ness Monster, I don't think it will be a dinosaur. That if it is ever found to be something, it will be a species of a giant species of sturgeon. It will be some giant species of eel. It will be something like that. Not a plesiosaur, not something that got trapped there in an ice age or something. I don't, I have a hard time believing, first of all, in how something that was originally designed for a tropical climate would be able to survive under those conditions. And even if it did somehow switch to becoming a warm-blooded creature, which is always possible, I don't know. I'm not expecting to find Nessie in the form in which she is most often spoken of. A Bigfoot, on the other hand, is a different subject. And I really do believe that when that creature is found, when somebody hits one with a car, where they trip across a body or whatever happens to either capture an image or an actual corpse or a living Bigfoot. I think it will be much closer to how the Native Americans have described Bigfoot, Sasquatch. I think the work of Dr. Jeff Meldrum at Iowa State or Idaho State University, I think that's going to be very key in this. So I don't have a problem with Bigfoot. Ghosts, do I believe in ghosts? I'm not sure what to do with that. I've never experienced a ghost per se, although I've been around experiences where you certainly felt something going on, and it would have been imperceptible to the eye, but you could feel it with your skin. you could feel something more than just the sum total of the environmental parts. So I think that there are things that are energetic in this world. We know that to be true. We have enough power in our fingertips to connect a battery. So I know that there's energy forces, and I know that we give them off, and I know that we must be also susceptible to them. So I think that's happened. I've seen a UFO. So that's, to me, that's not a question. Now, what was in the UFO, I don't know. But I saw one, and I saw it over a period of minutes. I saw a pattern of them, and I'll never forget it. And so there are just some of them, and we could go on. But I think that that's the perhaps the difference between me and other people. I think they either are happening or they're not. And that's why I love this show, because I look forward someday to being able to have the proof that says, indeed, they're happening. Chris is in California on an open line to get us started again this hour on Coast to Coast. Chris?
How are you doing, Ian?
Hey.
Good, good. Hey, I just wanted to ask you the million-dollar question, buddy.
Go ahead.
Where do you think happens when we die? Or where do you think you'll go when you die? You going to heaven or hell?
Well, you know, that's from my religious training, the belief is to try not to focus on that. So that, you know, I can't ultimately make that decision. It's not my decision to make. I hope for heaven.
I'm not asking to make your decision. I was just going to see, like, where do you think you'd be going? If there is a heaven or hell, are you going to heaven or hell?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if the last shall be first and the first shall be last in the Christian paradigm, then doesn't one strive to be last so that one can be first?
So are you trying to say that you think you're going to hell, or
what I'm saying is that honestly, I can't make that determination anyway. So I'd like to think that I am. I'd like to think that I would be worthy of whatever great reward is out there, or that our spiritual selves will continue on in some other form, and that my wife and I, for example, I'd love to think that we would spend eternity together. But I don't know that, and so I don't work toward that. What I work toward is a more just world in which more people live more comfortably, and I don't just write them off and say, well, that whatever happens to them happens to them. I'm only going to worry about my own salvation. How about
that's a good way to look at it. Well, do you think it takes maybe like you got to be a good person, right? Or, I mean, you got to be good, right?
Well, okay. But in the tradition of that I grew up in, redemption is possible at any point.
Yeah.
But I think that's important. So yeah, should we be good people? Yes. I believe we should be good people because we are God's hands and eyes and ears. I believe we see something and we should do something about it. We hear about something and we should act.
How about you? Do you think you're a good person?
I work hard at being a good person.
Well, can we do a quick test and then it will be over? Let me see if you're a good person. Can we do that?
You have determined the definitive test on whether or not I'm a good person.
Yes, I have. Actually, okay. This is the wild card line. What do you expect?
All right, go ahead.
All right. Well, have you ever told a lie in your life?
Sure.
Okay, so what does that mean?
I'm actually a really good liar.
So that makes you a liar. Okay. Have you ever stolen anything?
When I was a kid.
Okay, what does that make you? People who steal stuff, what do they call?
Thieves.
Okay, thieves. Have you ever looked at a woman with lust? You know, who hasn't, right?
Just 2 hours ago when my wife was sleeping. Why?
You know that Jesus said that any man that looks at a woman with lust has committed adultery with her in his heart.
I committed adultery with my wife just tonight. You're exactly right.
Well, okay, well, how about this? Well, that's your wife. Have you ever looked at another woman that you weren't married to with lust?
No.
Never. Well, you just admitted to me a minute ago you're a liar, so be careful.
No, I'm a very good liar. Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's put it this way.
Wait, you had the definitive test. So what's
this is the definitive test. Okay. Well, have you ever hated another person?
I have not to the point where I felt like I was irrational in my emotions about them. I have been angry. I've been frustrated. I've been irritated. I have been, but I'd like to think that anybody with whom I have had bad words or hard feelings, that there's still hope for reconciliation. So I wouldn't put that in the category of hate. I mean, do I hate Adolf Hitler? I mean, I hate what he did, and I hate everything he stood for, but I also have hope for the soul of people that they would someday regret what the awful things they did. Does that help?
You know, Jesus also said that any man that hates his brother without a cause is committed the crime of murder. You heard that one, right?
Yep.
Okay, one last one. Have you ever used God's name in vain?
Depending on how you define that. I mean, according to the Bible, you know, some people say to use the name of the Lord, period, at any time is in vain. So you just said God, by some people's criteria, you just use God's name in vain.
I see what you mean. Well, yeah, then yeah, I'm guilty of that. So, I mean,
I wasn't raised in a tradition that said, I mean, the whole idea about God's name in vain, I mean, if we're going to the commandment, the belief is that you're calling upon God to condemn people. You're speaking for God, and that you're using God in sort of a magical context. That is, you're using the name of God almost as a sorcerer would to condemn somebody or to control somebody. So the vanity of that is that you can control something that is ineffable, and that's the vanity of it. So
that makes sense. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We were never supposed to say the holy name of God, which would have been Yahweh, as we add the vowels to it.
Exactly.
And so the true followers of that would never actually pronounce that name, that word. That was the sacred I am that I am that we were never supposed to say.
Well, so on that level, in the traditional sense, that would be probably no, right? I don't think you've ever used God's name in a sorcerer kind of manner.
I don't believe in speaking for God in that sense, where I would say, God believes this about you.
Let me ask you this way. Have you ever used God's name in place of like a four-letter filth word?
I use vulgarity.
Well, I mean, have you used God's name in a vulgar manner? Maybe when you're angry or something, such as like the GD or using God's
name. Well, see, I don't happen to think that God is God's name. So that sense, I don't think of that. So have I ever used any of the holy names for God in vain? No.
No, but just in the manner, the traditional manner, probably. To some extent, right? The way we would use.
If you're saying, have I ever said, "Oh my God, shut up"? Yeah, I have, but I don't. That's not considered the holy name of God. That wouldn't rise to the level, as I understand it, of what the scripture was telling us.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so by your own admission, you're a lying, thieving, adulterous, blasphemer, murderer at heart. So that's how many of the commandments?
Okay, you've inserted...
Hold on, hear me out real quick.
You inserted those things in there that I actually said I didn't do. So we should have just skipped to your conclusion, because I actually made a point to say I didn't do many of those things. I don't have that kind of hate in my heart. For example, I said no to that, and I said no to adultery, but you put that back in there anyway. So go ahead and say what you want to say.
Remember, in the book of Proverbs, it does say in 14:12, Proverbs says there's a way that seems right to a man, that way seems to lead to death. So, but at any rate... Listen, this is what I'm trying to get at. On the judgment day, the day you stand before God in judgment, which is the day you die, Book of Hebrews also says that the portion for man to die once, and after this is the judgment. After breaking God's law, how do you think you'd stand on the day? You'd be guilty or innocent?
Which laws are you talking about? All 613 of them?
No, the Ten Commandments specifically, not the way that it's been read into.
Okay, there's actually, depending, you know, I don't want to get too deep on this, and I think we've probably lost a few people along the way, but there's either more or less than the Ten Commandments. I think I do pretty well on the basis of the Ten Commandments. But if what you're telling me is that I'm a loser in the eyes of God, let me just say that's the best news I've heard, because then indeed, maybe the last shall be first. And you first people, good luck. Let me get to Larry in Washington on Coast to Coast Open Lines. Larry?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Just fine. On your guest, I thought that was a great guest earlier.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And anyhow, I had a couple of theories on some of the stuff you mentioned. One of them was that usually why they put them in water is to get rid of the forensics evidence.
Right, DNA. That's certainly been discussed, the possibility that that's why these victims of what some people refer to as the smiley face killers end up in water. Yep, excellent.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I wonder if they're looking, it sounds to me like somebody's got a home location and a college location, because they obviously got to be at college age to get next to these people. And traveling that corridor, it's probably a convenient dumping ground, but when law enforcement says this, that, you were right. I mean, Bianchi and Bono was the first two that jumped to mind. Charlie Manson and his group, where they said that, well, they don't operate in groups. How about Joe Hunt and the Billionaire Boys Club?
Right.
These people almost, and also the Dungeon Dragons killers. There was a group of them that went out and killed one of them's family to start off with. But these people almost sound like Leopold and Loeb.
Well, and let's mention, too, that there have been couples who have done this, too,
where
it was a male-female, and that it's possible that there's a woman that's luring these guys into these situations, too, as horrible as that is to contemplate. So, yeah, I mean, what we do know right now, thank you, is very little. What we can surmise, or what we can kind of pull together from other sources, that's pretty broad. So go take a look online at what we're talking about, coasttocoastam.com. Click onto the Christy Peel link, and it'll take you to her website, where she's tracking the evidence for what looks like a campus, like a college kid killer cult. How about that for a name? Let me get to Diane in Florida, first time caller on Coast to Coast. Diane?
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
I just wanted to call. So many people have been calling in about the sleep paralysis.
Right.
And years ago, I know it's really scary, and the first thing you do is you panic. But maybe what would help, because what helps for me, is as soon as I know it's happening and you realize that it's not a dream, you know what's coming, force yourself to relax. If your eyes are open, or if you feel like your eyes are open and you're seeing, but yet you're paralyzed and can't move,
right,
force yourself to close your eyes if you can. You have to relax your entire body, no matter how afraid you are, and count to three. One, two, three, and then you wake up, and
right,
it's over. And that's the way to take the scariness out of it. At least that's worked for me. And maybe it will work for someone else out there.
I think that goes back to the subject of the idea that it's like a riptide. You know, when you're swimming in a riptide, the more you try to fight the riptide, the more panicked you'll get, and the more you'll wear yourself out. But as soon as you know you're in a riptide, it's about relaxing and trying to swim in a manner which is, you know, you're not trying to swim against it. You're going to try and swim away from it in a calm manner, and that's how people survive.
Yes, that's exactly right. You just have to force yourself to relax. Count to three. It'll be over. You'll wake up.
I love that.
You'll be
good.
Fine. At least that works for me. I hope it does work for someone out there, because it is really scary.
I think that's a really good tip and a good reminder for people. All right, Gene is in Louisiana. Gene, do we have time for you before the break?
Yes. I'd like to know, the other day you had a show on about the time prompt phenomenon. Well, I've experienced this myself. It started about 2 months ago. I would wake up at 44 minutes after the hour. Might not be every hour, but it seems like every time I wake up, it's always 44 minutes after the hour.
That is weird. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and I know that they did a whole show on that. In fact, people can find that by linking up at coasttocoastam.com for more on that. And more open lines coming up next. This is Ian Punnett. Doug Feiger dying today, finally, after a battle with cancer. At one point, I think I saw, it was a story a couple years ago about how he was performing in Vegas, and right in the middle of the performance, they had to stop it because he couldn't remember the lyrics. Or rather, the lyrics were all coming out jumbled, and he couldn't remember the lyrics to that particular song that whatever it was. That was how they discovered that his cancer had spread to his brain. had been in lung cancer, but then had spread to his brain, and they treated him, and he was back on the road again because he performed after that on TV on that show about one-hit wonders or something like that that came out the next summer. Anyway, it was a good band, and definitely of the many Knack tracks that you could play, Good Girls Don't, always the one that sounded most Beatlesque to me. I always loved that tune. All right, so a half hour more of Open Lines. Where are you going to take us? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Back to Open Line calls on Coast to Coast. We start on the wild card line where Greg has been waiting patiently since, well, almost a half hour. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Ian. Can you hear me, Greg?
Yeah, thanks for hanging on.
Okay, I just wanted to tell a story about sleep paralysis and also involves a ghost. A little backstory. I went up to a concert in Chicago with a friend, and I drove the entire way. Towards the end of the concert, he was intoxicated, but I restrained from any of that. And, we went back to a friend's house, and she had been talking about how they've had ghost activity, like toilets flushing, garage doors opening, stuff like that.
Poltergeist-type things?
Yeah, and we ended up going downstairs, and we fell asleep, me and my friend downstairs, and I had a weird dream that night. We were, like, looking through the house, me and my friend, like, opening cabinets, looking for something. And then all of a sudden, I had sleep paralysis, which I did quite often, actually. And I saw something coming down the stairs. It was, like, a white, misty-type thing, and I was actually hovering over my body, or it seemed like I was hovering over my body. And this thing came up towards me, and I tried to talk to it. I tried to say my name is Greg, but it came out in stutters, like, my name, like, you know, like that. And after that, I woke up out of that, and I was pretty panicked at the time. I was just laying there wondering what happened, and I kind of asked, I don't know if it was out loud or to myself, if you're real or whatever, can you show my friend? Because, you know, I have no way to validate this. And so I laid there for about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and all of a sudden, my friend looks over at me, and he, like, reaches out with his hand out, but his eyes are still closed, and he started saying, but, because my friends, they call me Boda, which is, like, a last name, and he was actually trying to say my name that morning when I talked to him. He said he had a weird dream that some old man walked up to him and, like, grabbed his shoulder and whispered in his ear, which he had never had sleep paralysis before.
Right.
So, I don't know. It was a weird experience.
Yeah. So, do you think it's the kind of thing that you could control? Previous caller said as soon as she starts to feel them coming on, she can at least immediately start to slow down her own heart rate, not panic, and then control the experience a little bit more.
A little bit. That's why I tried to, like, talk, you know, I tried to speak right, or whatever I felt was in the room with me. But I get sleep paralysis quite often. The first time it was terrifying, and I've kind of grown to the point where I try and make it last as long as I can, hang on to it.
Oh, interesting. Kind of milk it and see where it takes.
I never get very far. Usually it feels like a couple seconds pass, maybe 10, and then right, I usually wake up out of whatever. But I also wanted to add a quick comment. Do you think it has anything to do with endogenous DMT in the brain? I've always wondered that.
You know, I don't know, but we've had an authority on to talk about that. And I know we've talked about sleep paralysis in the past, so I will make a note of that to get somebody back on again, because it seems to be something that's bubbling up through these open line calls. Ryan is in Wisconsin on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Ryan?
Hey, Ian.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just was curious to know if you had heard like those swarming rumors going around Denver International Airport about the supposed death camps there, New World Order concentration camps being built there.
I'm not a big believer in that kind of in that theory. So okay. I've heard, yes, I mean I've heard, but here's the deal. Every time somebody has submitted a photo that has said, here's where the death camps are, or here's what it looks like, it turns out not to be that. So, okay. I mean, part of this goes back to the original design of DIA. You know about that, right? Some of the weird. Okay. And so I think some of it just kind of keeps coming back to the idiosyncratic sculpture and or some of the artwork that's a DIA that just, it's kind of freaky, but whether that means that there's death camps nearby, I don't know. What do you hear about it? What about it makes you believe that's possible?
Well, the main thing that's interesting to me is not the artwork and all that stuff that everybody gets kind of freaked out about, in like the swastika, like where the runways are designed that way.
Right.
What I was thinking about is the aspects of control and how you would organize something if something catastrophic were to happen. Like, I don't really think it's a death camp or a concentration camp. For what I've seen of the designs of it, and I actually used to live in Colorado, so I've been to that airport quite a bit. From what I see, the designs, and from what I've heard, it seems that it's being built as for a utilitarian purpose, as for a use, a fort of some sort, especially the way the runways are designed, just because you can bring in lots of aircraft at one time. Now, I don't know why they're building that.
Why wouldn't you want that from in any airport? Why would that be considered a special design? If you had a brand new, I mean, remember, DIA was built as an answer to a problem that the old airport was too small. So if you're going to build an airport, wouldn't you want runways where you could have many things coming in all at once without fear of them crisscrossing or, you know, knocking each other out in the sky?
Yeah, that's a very good point. The only like thing like where I kind of raise the eyebrow to it is just the fact of how much land it was built upon.
Right.
It was built on 50 square miles, which is the largest amount that any airport's ever been built on. So that, I mean, that could be nothing for all I know, but.
Okay, we'll stop there. Let's use our critical minds. Every time you're going to build an airport, you know that there's going to be there's a toe tag on it. When if air travel continues to expand and people continue to, you know, for business purposes, have to fly in and out. Every time you build an airport, you build them increasingly larger. Midway Airport in Chicago is much smaller than O'Hare Airport, which was built afterward and built much bigger. And then there's even talk of a third airport that would come halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee to handle all of that traffic. And that would be bigger than O'Hare by twice. So that's going to be a natural way of going with an airport size, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. The main thing I've been thinking about too is the fact that I was reading somewhere, I just have it up on my laptop right now, that members of the royal family have been purchasing real estate within that area. And I've heard a couple of people mention I don't even know if this is true, so I can't verify it, but I've heard of, you know, the Bush family having real estate there and stuff like that. I mean, all that's hearsay, but it just kind of brings up, you know, a weird question, you know, what's going on? And there's been a whole bunch of, I mean, it's a very interesting subject to see, like,
it is an interesting
stuff.
It is an interesting subject. Other than here, I haven't put a lot of time into the New World Order Concentration Camp Airport DIA. But I will look into it more in the future. If there's another show in there, we'll do that. And, you know, royal family, you're right. Hearsay, sometimes hearsay is just intended to make you go, and be part of a good story. So we'll see if anything could come of that. Jonathan is in Rochester, New York. First time caller line on Coast to Coast. Jonathan?
Thank you for taking my call, Ian.
Not a problem. Go ahead.
I have a question. The Todd Guide case that Christy was talking about.
Yep. In the first hour, we were talking about this on Coast to Coast, a missing college student. Yep.
They said that they think he was missing for 16 days before he was killed. Is that correct?
Well, there's some disparity there. He was missing for 21 days when they found him. One coroner says he was dead the entire 21-day stretch. The other one says, no, he was only dead for 3 to 5 days before they found the body. And so I was just giving a number, you know, sort of roughly in between there, whether it's 3, 5, whatever, right, that there's a time in between. So, yeah.
Okay. My question is this. They said he was found with a 0.12 blood alcohol level.
Right.
So if he was missing for a few days before he was killed, he must have gotten himself reintoxicated somehow.
It's entirely possible that's what the captor could have done, just kept giving him alcohol to drink. We don't know how drunk he was that night because nobody performed a test on him right. The night he staggered away from the party, right?
Right. But he, you know, even if he was super, super drunk over, you know, 5 or 6 days, he would have gone, you know, the blood alcohol would have disappeared from his body.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that, but that's an interesting point, and I'll bring that up with Christy. We'll do a follow-up later on today, and Jonathan, I will mention that to her. Good question. Bernadine's in Minnesota on Coast to Coast for an open line call. Hey, Bernadine.
Hi, Ian. Nice to talk to you again.
And to you.
I kind of have a lighter story. It's a story I just wanted to share with you, something that happened to me when I was a very young woman. Now in my older age, I think of things, you know, that happened when I was younger, and I get a chuckle out of them. At the time, you know, I was pretty serious about things, but now that kind of keeps me happy and going. One evening, I drove downtown St. Paul, and I was going to go shopping, and I parked in front of the St. Paul Hotel, which is an upscale hotel. I'm sure you know where that is. St. Peter Street, you could park there in the old days. And now you can't, I guess. But anyhow, I was a young woman. I was still living at home, and my dad gave me his 64 Plymouth. It didn't have power steering in it. And I saw this place to park in parallel parking. Well, I guess because it didn't have power steering and I wasn't that good at parallel parking, it took me about 10 minutes to get that car in that spot. Mm-hmm. And I was a little frustrated and everything, but I finally did it, and I was relieved because I could go shopping then. And so I get out of the car, and I heard, I wasn't too far from the back, from the entrance on St. Peter Street, and I heard like a clapping noise or something. So I looked over. Here is this guy standing near the entrance. He had on a dark suit and a fedora-like hat, and he had a cigar in his mouth, and he was laughing, and he was clapping and clapping and clapping because I finally parked. He clapped, you know?
Right.
And I put my hands on my hips, and I said, "Don't you have anything better to do with your time?" And I was really, you know, I was really frustrated with him. So that evening when I got home, I was telling my dad, I said, "You know, Dad, I had a funny experience, you know, and this guy clapped because I had a hard time parking the car." And he said, "Oh, my gosh, you shouldn't have yelled at him. He could be one of those Goodfella guys."
Yeah, one of the mobsters.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, at the time I wasn't thinking that way. But I always wanted to tell this story.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
George Norrie had, you know, like your most embarrassing thing
right.
One night, and they had too many callers, so I didn't get on.
Well, but I'm glad
wanted
you did.
I just wanted to tell this because, you know, as we get older, you know, the things we've done in our, you know, in our younger days are something that, you know, we might have been frustrated or.
Well, you know, and you know who one of the most famous residents of the St. Paul Hotel was?
No.
Al Capone.
Oh, Al Capone. I didn't know that.
That was there's still a room that they know of as the Al Capone room at the St. Paul Hotel. And thank you, Bernadine, for sharing that story. You still can parallel park, by the way, in front of the hotel. They still have a few spaces, but you got to bring like 50 quarters because like one quarter for 8 minutes. But yeah, it's a famous old hotel. It's where a lot of people stayed when they came in for the Republican National Convention. And she's right. St. Paul has a very interesting history with mobsters and gangsters. John Dillinger spent a lot of time here. Ma and Pa Barker had an apartment that's probably 8 blocks from where I'm sitting right now. Kathy's in Wisconsin. Open line calls across the country on Coast to Coast. Kathy, where are you going to take us?
Oh, okay. I'm just calling because of the gentleman that called earlier that has the pain in the leg and the hip.
Yeah.
I had pain like that. And for 7 months, I continually went to doctors, told them, you know, wow, this hurts. Oh, it's a pulled muscle. It's, you know, I'm just calling so to tell the guy that don't settle for that, because mine turned out to be multiple myeloma, and it was actually a tumor.
Oh, no.
That was causing the pain. Yeah.
Did they get the tumor out?
Yeah, I had the tumor radiated out, and then I had a bone marrow transplant because multiple myeloma is cancer of the plasma cells of the blood.
Sure, right.
And, I've been in remission. It'll be 5 years here.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but anyway, that guy should be diligent, you know, don't settle for it's in your head,
right,
et cetera. And then
can I tell you one more thing? Our time's running out, but go ahead.
Okay. You know, you said you didn't believe in ghosts.
No, I didn't say that.
Huh?
No, I didn't say that.
You said you haven't seen one yet. You're right. Okay. So it made it sound like, well, you know, until you see it, then you'll believe it, you know. But anyway, I did see one quite a while ago. And anyway, I deliver newspapers. And there's this little town near me called Afton, and they had an antique store with a post office right next to it. And I went up there, you know, every weekend to throw the bundle of papers up on that porch there for a kid to come pick up later to deliver the small town. And anyway, I went up there and I went to throw the bundle, and I looked, and there stood this old lady in a robe. No expression in her face. She's kind of blue-gray, hair pulled back in a ponytail, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, I just made somebody mad because I'm making too much noise out here in the middle of the night. So that was on Sunday. So Monday I went into the antique shop, and I asked them, I says, somebody live here? And they said, no. I says, okay, is there an apartment upstairs? No. Okay, so then I went over to the post office. I says, anybody staying in here? No. There's nobody here in the building on the weekends. So there stood that lady staring at me. And to this day, I can still see her face. She didn't
And she's probably, to this day, she's probably still looking at you too, Kathy. And who knows? Who knows where she might be right now? West of the Rockies, Jeff, you get the last thought on this before we close up shop tonight for open lines. Jeff?
Hey, Ian, thanks for taking my call. Be real quick. I know we're almost out of time.
We are.
One of my main concerns is I'm looking at our financial situation in our country.
Yep.
We owe so much money, it appears as though it's never going to be paid off. What's going to happen if we have a financial collapse? What would happen to our society? What would it be like to try to go down to Food Max and get something to put on my table? Would those things be there? Could I get gas at ARCO?
Right.
And all these things. What would be the ripple effect of a total collapse, say, on Monday come the following Friday?
Well, you know, that's a question that we explore all the time here on Coast to Coast, and so keep listening as we get more and more guests in to talk about that. And not that it's going to happen or that we can't avoid it, and I don't know, maybe we just call one of those attorneys we see on TV late at night and declare bankruptcy as a country. See if that works. Get protection against our creditors. File Chapter 11. Whatever the case is, though, we'll be on the case, and you'll keep listening to Coast to Coast. George Norrie coming up tomorrow night. In the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.